Medical information obtained from our website or the live show is not intended to be a substitute for professional care. If your pet has or you suspect they might have an illness or other medical condition, you should consult a health care provider. The opinions expressed on this radio program are not necessarily those of All Paws Pet Talk, this radio show, or their sponsors.
And now live in this studio, it's the All Paws Pet Talk call-in radio show with a valuable knowledge and expertise of our panel guests ready to take your calls. Listen for the phone number so you may call in live. Take it away, panel.
Welcome to All Paws Pet Talk. This is Country Joe's Chicken Show, and we're here today with Joe Barber. Welcome, Joe.
Hey, glad to be here after the holiday. You know, seems like it took a long time off. No radio. I missed it. Yeah, so what do we got today? We got Jennifer.
We have Jennifer Glover, who is actually works for the state of Florida. Welcome to All Paws Pet Talk, Jennifer.
Thank you, and good afternoon, everybody.
Yeah. Boy, we've got a lot of questions for you, Jennifer.
Oh, good.
Everybody's been asking me about the laws are going to change here in Florida for the farmers that are doing small egg production. Is that true?
That's correct. It's in the legislation, and I think it's kind of going quickly, so there will be more to come, you know, after that. But I wanted to also start off and explain that I'm with the Florida Department of Agriculture. I'm the poultry program manager for the state of Florida. And I've done this for 31 years.
Wow.
I hope I can answer people's questions.
I know you can. I know you can. Wow. When I heard you were coming on the show, of course, I belong to the local chicken club here, the Volusia County Chicken Enthusiast Club, you know, and everybody was saying, oh, ask her this, ask her that. And I said, oh, my God, here we go. So, that was the first thing. Do you know what this law is going to entail or whatever to change?
Well, this is something I have been looking forward to because I get calls so often on how the smaller backyard flock can sell their eggs. And also some of them want to sell the chickens not for, pets or exhibition type birds, but for human consumption. And it's been, you know, very difficult going through the Division of Food Safety. Anything for human consumption is referred to them. Whereas what I do is animal disease control. But there is a new regulation, and that's exactly who it's directed towards, egg sales for farms. I'm reading right here. Egg sales from farms with up to 1,000 laying hens in a year. Mm-hmm. So that would definitely fit the average backyard plot. They don't usually have over, 1,000
That would
birds.
Be a very big backyard.
Right. But that's good. So that's kind of the range that they're looking at, and also would allow the slaughter and direct sale of no more than 20,000 poultry birds raised on a farm per year. And the reason why that number would be so much higher is because a meat type bird can be mature enough and ready to be slaughtered at 10 weeks of age.
Right.
But most of my calls, very few are for slaughter purposes, but I think that will increase, especially with quail. But the chicken eggs, definitely. There's a lot of people that want to sell their chicken eggs.
So will they be able to sell it, like, in a store or just at, a farmer's market?
Well, a lot of people do sell at farmer's market.
Right.
But the problem is they have to put on the container. It has to be labeled pet food and not, that's not very desirable. So buy a dozen eggs that says, pet food only. That's what the law to do it legally. You have to do that. And so it's because you cannot have direct farm sales for human consumption, right at the farm. So
right.
This will bypass that step and it'll allow people to sell directly, come on their farm or farmer's market, like you were saying, in any venue where there's consumers are selling other kind of ware and products and things like that. A lot of times there's honey or jelly or, other types of products. So it'll allow direct sales there.
Okay. Is there going to be any kind of, farm inspections or anything for meat chickens, per se?
I don't know enough about how you will be permitted.
Uh-huh.
I do believe it'll be a you know, a permitting process, but I'm just not sure. And maybe it won't be a permitting process.
Right.
But, yeah, I don't know those type of details. I just know this has been mm-hmm. in the talks for a while. And, wait, let me see. I'm reading on this down. A farmer would need to get an annual $110 permit.
Hmm.
So, obviously, you would have to, even when there's upland game birds such as quail and pheasants and waterfowl, you have to get a permit from Fish and Wildlife Commission, and it's a matter of completing paperwork. And there's not a farm inspection for that, but I'm not sure if this new proposed rule will include a farm inspection. But obviously you will get a permit that will allow you to make these sales.
That sounds great. Now, when's this supposed to go into effect? Nobody knows for sure. Is that the
Well, it's slated for next year, 2013.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. That's going to be great. I can tell everybody that then tonight, because that's been the big question.
Right. I didn't realize there was a permit till I looked a little mm-hmm. further on this that I have. The $110 would certainly pay for itself eventually in having that permit.
Right.
Would
help. Oh, yeah.
So,
and is that a permit on the state level or a county level? Or
it would be on the state.
It permit?
Would come from, like I am, even though I'm with the Department of Agriculture, I'm in the Division of Animal Industry. So this is still a Department of Agriculture, but it's the Division of Food Safety.
Mm-hmm.
Anything starts to deal with human consumption goes to food safety.
Right. Okay. Now, would this also include turkeys, I hope?
Yes.
Yep. Okay.
Especially since you just got done eating your turkeys, it will definitely include turkeys.
Good. All
and
right.
also, another thing, some people with their quail, restaurants mm-hmm. want fresh birds, you know, for specialty items. And this should allow to be able to sell to restaurants also.
Oh,
so it looks
wow.
like there will be a permitting process, and this is going to be decided on for, you know, to be in effect for next year.
Oh, great. So we should see more about that on the news and in the papers, I guess, right?
Yes, definitely.
And is there a website, Jennifer, where Florida residents can go and look up this sort of information? I know.
Oh, yes, absolutely. It's very easy. The website is Fresh From Florida, one word, freshfromflorida.com. And if you mm-hmm. want to get directly to where the division I work for, you would do freshfromflorida.com/AI. That stands for animal industry. Mm-hmm. But on the main site, you can search around and go to the Division of Food Safety, Division of Marketing. It's actually a good website to visit.
Yeah.
That is freshfromflorida.com.
I got it.
Excellent. Yeah. Jennifer, I know Joe has an awful lot more questions for you, and I'm sure he's got them all stacked up. We're almost out of time for this segment. Will you stick with us and come back?
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, excellent. Because I know, like I said, I know Joe has lots of questions for you, and some of the questions apply to people all around the country, not just Florida. So we'll be right back with more of Country Joe's Chicken Show here on All Paws Pet Talk Radio.
She said, rearrange my family tree. A chicken is what I want to be.
Welcome back to Country Joe's Chicken Show here on All Paws Pet Talk Radio. We're here with Joe Barber, Chicken Joe, and with Jennifer Glover from the Florida Department of Agriculture Animal Safety Division. Jennifer, did I get that right?
Yes, that's good.
Yeah. Wow, that's a lot to say. Uh-huh. Well, Jennifer, I guess the other questions I have is on the egg thing, is they're all going to ask me, do these eggs need to be boxed up with a separate label and egg sizes?
I'm sure it's part of the permitting process because mm-hmm. this legislature proposed rule is actually not from my division. It is all the Division of Food Safety. Mm-hmm. And with that permitting process, I'm sure there'll be, you know, instructions of, well, cleanliness and how they need to be stored until sold and things like that.
Just common sense stuff, I guess, right?
Right, sure. Yes. And, of course, if you want to start selling and, you know, you would want to sell eggs that aren't dirty and have been stored properly, so you'll have more people coming back to buy some more.
That sounds great. Oh, boy, I tell you, that's exciting news. Everybody in our chicken club is going to love hearing that because, you know, now they're, you know, switching eggs and trading eggs and doing all kinds of stuff and trying to stay.
And also what I'm referring to, you know, table eggs. But what I do with the Division of Animal Industry is where I come in is if you're selling or purchasing, breeding, exhibiting chickens, then I do what's called the National Poultry Improvement Plan, the NPIP, and that is intended for people who are breeding and wanting to sell their chicks, sell their chickens, or go to shows or get on eBay or Eggbit or whatever that chicken site is,
right?
Then that would require being involved with the National Poultry Improvement Plan. So if members of your club or listening on the radio are interested in that, they can certainly contact me because that's what I do.
Okay. Yeah, and I've got a couple that are going to be calling you.
Okay,
they just
bought
incubators and the whole thing, you know. And I have a neighbor up the road that's got a hatcher that does like 1,400 eggs. That's what she wants to do is sell chicks.
Well, then she definitely needs to contact me. We'll put her on the program.
Okay.
Now, Jennifer, could you describe the National Poultry Improvement Program for all our listeners?
It's actually the NPIP. It's a national program. So those participating, you know, it's everybody in the United States. I just had a meeting, and it included 48 states. It is a voluntary program, so it's not required, although the commercial companies require, but I'll stick with backyard flock types. It's even though it's a voluntary program, you have to meet a certain criteria, which means you are breeding, you have breeding poultry on your farm. It's not intended for the backyard flock that just have six hens or something for their table eggs. And it's intended to control egg transmitted diseases and in backyard flocks, exhibitions, and breeders. And the objective is just to monitor for poultry diseases. And we also provide education about flock best management practices and also for backyard flock that not have disease enter in your flock or you carry diseases. So it's a good program.
It is. It is. Boy, that sounds really interesting.
And what diseases do people have to be aware of? If you're getting into chickens for the first time, besides your chicken looking at you funny, how do you know your chicken is sick and what diseases should you look out for and what symptoms?
Well, what we test for, and I actually have 35 authorized testing agents, you know, across the state for this program are five diseases that are reportable diseases. But in the backyard flocks, we test for pallorum typhoid and avian influenza and exotic Newcastle disease. We standard test for pallorum typhoid. That's a type of a salmonella disease, but not the one you think of that humans get. It's actually contagious just amongst poultry. And then the avian influenza, that's something we've been doing statewide ever since it became news about 5 years ago.
Now, is it common down here?
I think 18,000 avian influenza tests so far this year and even the past years. We've not come up with any avian influenza.
I was going to say, because I've never had it on my farm, thank God.
You would know. We come visit you. But the pallorum typhoid is what when people, if you have them in your club, that go to exhibition at fairs and they're getting that little drop of blood from under their wing and mixing it up with antigen, that's the pallorum typhoid test, which is what we would do to your breeders if you wanted to participate.
Okay. All right. Are there any common diseases down here that we should know about?
Tell you the truth, it's not really a disease, but the internal intestinal parasites, that's something we have to do sick bird investigations if there are respiratory signs, and probably 8 out of 10 times the poultry had internal parasites. So that's something that the backyard flock owners need to keep in mind is that you do have to warm your birds.
Oh, we do. I use Wazine.
Well, and a lot of people actually don't realize that are just getting into poultry that they do need to be dewormed. And so that's probably the biggest thing that I wouldn't consider a disease. There's a lot of fowl pox this year due to when it was wet from Tropical Storm Debbie and just the mosquito population. The vector is a mosquito. But as far as any reportable diseases, not really. We're doing pretty good.
Yeah, we are. Like I say, our club, we talk on the, you know, we're all always together. Once a month, we're always together for meetings. So we're very, very aware of worming our chickens, and everybody stays really on top of that. And I also mix diatomaceous earth in every day with my feed as a, you know, as the other precautionary for internal diseases, you know.
That's an excellent thing because you don't have to discontinue eating the eggs for a period of time. Mm-hmm. And that's recommended even to sprinkle in the nest box, on the litter, in the ground. So that's an excellent product to have on hand.
Yeah, everybody that I know does use that. And I don't know, it's pretty effective from what I heard, but I mean, I don't know that.
It is to help maintain and control, but if you actually did have a parasite problem right away, you know, right then, you should go with something, Wazine, you know, more of a stronger dewormer, and then you would start to monitor or keep them, like, maintain a healthy flock with that.
Yeah, and Ivamec, that's another one that we've used.
Right.
Where do these worms come from? How do chickens get worms? Where is that in the first place? If I'm just starting out in chickens.
Well, it's natural to have a certain amount, but just from the soil. But you don't want to discourage. You want chickens, if possible, to free range and get in the dirt. It's just a cycle. It's like the little fleas that are different than what get on dogs get on chickens. Well, then they got in the soil, then they laid eggs, and it's a cycle where if you do have a bad problem, you really need to treat the soil, and then before you put birds back on it.
We do that. I do that every time I cycle layers for new layers. You know, I leave the pen open, and I use bleach and water, actually. You know,
absolutely. Regular bleach is one of the best disinfectants. Yeah. It becomes an inert ingredient once it's in the ground. So you don't have to worry about your putting, you know, chemicals out. Once it does its work and then it gets heated up, then you're fine. Put it in your water dishes, everything.
Yeah, boy, the old-timers down here, that's where I learned all this stuff, is the old-timers.
I still learn from them. And since you are in a club and do swaps, et cetera, it's also wise to keep whatever birds you add to your flock separate, if possible, for 2 weeks, just to be sure that there are respiratory diseases, common backyard chronic respiratory disease, to be sure you're not going to spread anything to your existing flock.
Yeah, I do that. On the other side of my farm, I have a coop just for that. You know, when I get new chickens in or we trade chickens, they stay in quarantine. Matter of fact, I leave mine over there for almost a month just to really double make sure, you know.
Right. If you have the room, 2 weeks is the minimum. So 4 weeks is excellent. And I would also caution getting any poultry from animal sale markets because they're already under a certain amount of stress, the auctions. And then you can just add on, you thought that bird was nice, and you add it to your flock, and then I get a call of, now all my birds are sick.
Oh. So Jennifer, Joe, we are out of time for this.
Oh, my. Okay.
Oh, my God.
I want to thank you so much. You've been listening to All Paws Pet Talk Radio with Country Joe's Chicken Show, and we'll be right back with more.
I'm a green chicken.
She said, rearrange my family tree. A chicken is what I want to be.
Welcome to Country Joe's Chicken Show here on All Paws Pet Talk Radio. We're here with Joe Barber, a.k.a. Chicken Joe, and with Pat Foreman with the Occupy Backyard Movement. Welcome to All Paws Pet Talk, Pat.
Oh, it's an honor to be here. I mean, anytime I can talk about chickens and occupying backyards, to enable local agriculture. I'm just all over it. So thank you for having me on.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I was looking at your website. Boy, that's really intense. there's a lot to it. Karen says, check out this website. And I did, and I went, oh, my God. You know, boy, that's really something. All the courses and in the whole thing. And I thought, boy, that's going to be a challenge. I'm going to do that one.
Yes, it's the home of the Million Chicken March to Occupy Backyards. It's changing local agriculture one flock at a time. no yokes.
Okay.
Do you want to just describe it a little bit to people besides, you know, the name Occupy Backyard? You know, is this aimed at any getting chickens in every yard or getting more chickens in the yards that have chickens? Or
okay, sure. Well, the Occupy movement, as you know, has gone worldwide and represents 99% of pretty much all the people in the world, supposedly. And it seems to be expanding. Well, Oprah Henfrey, and her name is spelled capital H-E-N hyphen F-R-E-E, Henfrey. She's a chicken activist, a real chicken, and goes with me and is a co-presenter to a lot of the workshops. And she's the co-author of the Declaration to Occupy Backyards, and it calls for 99% of all the chickens in the world to at least live locally, where they can enable local agriculture and help grow healthy and humane food supplies. So there is a formal declaration of chickens to occupy backyards. It's on the website, and it's modeled after the New York Declaration to Occupy Backyards. And even though it's kind of a tongue-in-cheek approach to it, it really is quite profound. Because if we can get local agriculture strengthened and made much more viable and sustainable throughout the country, it goes a long way to solving a lot of our nation's problems. And those problems include, you know, local healthy foods. It includes diverting yard and food waste and converting that into topsoil and garden soil and fertilizer. It can help decrease oil consumption and oil dependence because of so much of just about all the commercial food is oil dependent. It takes about 17% of all the food, all the oil that the U.S. consumes goes towards food production. And there's quite a few other things along in there as well as emergency preparedness. I mean, quite frankly, a backyard flock, if you have chickens and a disaster happens, you'll still be eating. And when I look at my flock out in the backyard when the Sandy went through, I live in Virginia, or the derecho came through, I mean, it's just part of my emergency preparedness because I always keep getting eggs. If it gets really bad, I can have a chicken dinner or two. And if it gets really, really bad, that organic feed that I have would probably make a pretty good muspa. So it's broad reaching. This declaration to occupy backyards. We even have bumper stickers.
Wow! Yeah, I noticed down here in Florida, city after city are legalizing this now. We just had another one a while back. We had a guy on and about legalizing chickens in his county and his small city, and they finally got it. And it's just city after city down here that are going for it. So I know it's a big thing. You know, I hear it all the time from people. How do I get this going and the whole thing? And now I'm just going to refer them to your website.
Thank you. Well, the website is Chickens and You, ANDYOU, it's spelled out.com, and it's sponsored by the Gossamer Foundation. It's a nonprofit, 501c3, and all the there's 21 that we have. They're all all the proceeds go back to Gossamer to help enhance local agriculture and just get a healthy food supply. So it's exciting, may I say.
And yeah. That's why everybody down here is doing it, because it just for that reason. They want to take control of their own food, And it's really, really working. It really is.
It is. What's interesting, Joe, is once people get chickens, then often they'll start thinking about gardening. And before you know it, you've got more gardens as well as family flocks. We have the poultry, that's Shenandoah Valley Poultry and Garden Club here in Virginia. I think it's the first club that combines both the topics, gardening as well as keeping poultry. And something magical happens when you do that. People that have chickens but have never gardened, after a year or so, they're starting to garden. And people that have gardens but have never had chickens get chickens almost immediately. So
it's true. It goes hand in hand. It does, because I started growing pumpkins and watermelons for my chickens. You know, I can see how that works.
Well, you're so right on, because not all feed has to come from bags. And there's so much that you can grow in your garden and then view your lawn literally as a mini pasture and grow clovers and seeds, you know, grasses and forbs that the chickens like. I mean, it's quite possible to go more towards self-sustainability, not only for your family, but also for your flock.
Boy, I'd sure like that. Cut my grain bill down. You know, what other things could we plant for chickens that would help subsidize this?
Oh, there's so much. And what's interesting is chickens love people food. Have you noticed that? Just about anything people eat, whether it's bacon or potatoes or popcorn or spinach, doesn't matter. As long as it's kind of in beak-sized bits and they can get their little beak around it, they'll chomp it down. So that's a short answer to your question, but the little longer answer is they love things like comfrey. They'll actually graze on grains if you have that in there. They like the clovers and you can grow field peas. They like cabbages. Of course, they love worms and bugs. They're incredible insecticiders. there's a whole spectrum of how you can employ chickens using their skill sets in your yard and garden to enhance your, I like to say, organic assets, which includes creating and enriching topsoil, which is one of the two most viable things on the planet that determine whether we succeed or fail as a society, according to Jared Diamond, author of Collapse. Anyway.
Well, yeah, I know the fertilizer is just incredible. I take it out of here, and I've got people that call me all the time. It's my turn now, Joe. It's my turn. Can I have it this time? And I have, of course, I have a lot of chickens here. So, but the fertilizer is no problem to get rid of, I'll tell you. That's amazing.
Now, Joe, you probably ought to be charging for it because it's incredibly valuable. You know, there's a product called Cock-a-Doodle-Doo. And there's also another one called Chickadee Doo. They sell 20 pounds of dried fertilizer for $15. That's like 70 cents a pound. So that might be another side income stream for you.
Now I know why everybody's calling me, you know. It's my turn.
and Joe, why don't you tell our listeners how many chickens you have, just so they know that if they have three chickens in their backyard, they're not going to have enough fertilizer to sell.
Right. Well, I've got between 700 to 800, 900 chickens, depending, you know, because I raise my own meat chickens. And so that fluctuates up and down with the turkeys. But pretty close to 1,000 birds out here at peak times. So we do, and I have all – you know, great big outdoor coops that are 80 feet long. They're all wired. And so they're free range birds. So, but we constantly keep those coops, you know, shoveled out. So that's why I have a lot of fertilizer. And I'm sure chickens can do it.
I wouldn't give it away if I were you. Chicken fertilizer has an NPK that rivals commercial fertilizer. But it's got more trace minerals and organic matter in it. So it's truly better than commercial fertilizer for growing food in.
It is, because when I put it in my garden, it's amazing. The watermelons, I look at the size of them and I go, wow. You know, and the pumpkins.
Yeah.
And so I know, you know, I had a pile of fertilizer out there, manure, probably 18 inches high and 4 feet round, and I just threw the seeds in it, and oh my, they just like took off overnight. It seemed like.
You know, we are just about out of time for this segment. Pat, will you stick with us?
Oh, certainly, I'd love to.
All right, we'll be right back with more of Country Joe's Chicken Show here on All Paws Pet Talk Radio.
I'm a green chicken.
She said, rearrange my family tree. A chicken is what I want to be.
Welcome back to Country Joe's Chicken Show here on All Paws Pet Talk Radio. Now, we were just talking about the fertilizer effect that chickens can have for you. Now, Joe has 700 to 1,000 chickens, so he has enough fertilizer to give away or to even sell. Now, if you have just a few chickens in your backyard, is that, do you end up cleaning out their area a lot, or is that just something that will get mixed in with the dirt on its own?
Well, a few chickens can even produce significant amounts of usable manure, which is valuable. You know, here's an interesting thing: is a chicken eats about its weight in food every month. So if you have a standard 6-pound hen, that's they'll eat about 6 pounds of feed in a month, and yet they produce the raw manure is about 15% more than what they eat. So they'll produce about 115% of the manure, and then when that dries, it dries to about 1/3 of that's what the raw, that's what the cockadoodle do and the chickadee do is selling for. So you can calculate actually how much fertilizer your chickens can produce for you, which is pretty amazing. So even if you only have 10 chickens, they're going to eat about 60 pounds of feed, and they're going to produce about 20 pounds of organic fertilizer every month. And then, of course, mix that in with your bedding or whatever it is to help lock up the nitrogen. You've got significant amounts of backyard, locally produced, organic, mineral-loaded fertilizer. So it can be significant if it's handled correctly.
Yeah, and I notice mine doesn't really smell. I don't know if it's because we aerate it a lot or it dries out fast down here in Florida, but I really don't have a lot of smell with my chickens. I don't know if that's common or not common.
No, that should be common, and that shows that you have good management there, Joe. I mean, anytime you start to smell that ammonia, that means you're not doing something right, and usually it's a lack of enough carbon or that's just the raw manure buildup. So one of the things that I like to do is have quite a bit of wood shavings there in the coop, and especially under where they roost at night. I'll have a pretty high threshold, and what happens is they deposit about 50% of their manure is deposited at night. So when I'll put a little bit of scratch in there, what they do is they go and they scratch it all together, and that mixes the manure in with the wood shavings and locks up that nitrogen, so you capture it.
I use a lot of pine shavings. That's what I use.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's fine. That's perfect. And what's interesting is it really doesn't have to be composted. You can just go ahead and put it on your fields or put it in a compost pile. But it's as far as I know, there aren't really any diseases that come through non-composted chicken litter. I mean, they put it on commercial fields all the time without being composted. So. Yeah, it's a pretty good deal. I mean, that's part of the charm of chickens is they have all these skill sets. You know, it's not just about eggs. It's about fertilizer, and it's about being insecticiders. Entertainment is quite high on my list. I don't know.
It is very much. And on the same thing of manure, I can tell you turkeys are just phenomenal. It's like quadruple what a chicken does.
Yeah, well, they're so big.
It's the size of a bird, you know.
Yeah, but I love turkeys.
Yeah.
And that's something that our listeners who have, you know, very small backyards, some of our urban listeners can think about. If they're going to have chickens, but they know their neighbor has a garden, you know, you may be able to exchange your chicken's natural fertilizer for some nice tomatoes in August in Boston or, you know, whatever your gardener friend is growing, you'll help their garden, and they can help feed you and your chickens. It can all be a community effort.
It could.
Absolutely,
yeah.
Karen. That's a great point. And the other nice thing about the chicken manure is you mix it in with your yard and leaf, and kitchen waste. You can put the manure in with that, and then you've got the recipe for your compost.
So it
enhances. I mean, all the solid waste management, I see bags of leaves out on the street, you know, to be picked up by the trash collection. You know, if you have chickens, you just take all that as a valuable asset, mix it in with the manure, and all that solid waste never even has to leave the backyard. It's back there instead being composted and creating new topsoil. So in so many cases, communities are just trashing their organic assets of organic matter.
Mm-hmm.
That's right. You know, I'm up here as I said, just outside of Boston. So, of course, there are sizable quantities of leaves every fall. And when I, in my last place, when I was putting out, you know, 10 bags of leaves a week, I often looked at it and thought, you know, they should be compensating me for this. This is good stuff I'm giving them.
That's right. It's valuable. And unfortunately, when they collect it up, most of the times, not always, but most of the time, it goes in the landfill unless they have a recycling program that includes the you know, leaves and biomass that is recycled.
They do down here.
Yeah, and I was lucky in the city of Newton, where I lived last. I'm in Waltham now, but the city of Newton has a composting program so that you do give them your leaves, and then you can go to the recycle depot in Newton, and I'm sure this happens in other cities too, and just pick up wheelbarrows full of composted material.
Nice.
So I could get some of my leaves back in improved form.
Yeah, that's lovely. Big down here now too, also. You can go get it. You know, they compost it. They got mountains of the stuff. You know, they chip it all the trees and the leaves, and you can drop it off there for nothing if you want to. And I pass by that place a lot. So that's big down here now. It's starting to get big, I think, everywhere.
I hope so, because literally that mountains is mountains of black gold. It's mountains of topsoil, which we're losing so rapidly around the planet. From erosion and water wash off. For communities to actually have a net gain of topsoil is a big, big thing.
Mm-hmm. Now, tell me about your course, Pat. I'm interested in your course, how you get the diploma and the whole thing. Could you go over that real briefly?
Oh, thank you, Joe. Sure, I'd love to. Well, we have a weekend intensive of nine courses, and at the end of this really intensive weekend, we issue a backyard chicken keeper certification, and then there's a few more courses, five more, that then will grant the master backyard chicken keeper certification. And it really goes into how to employ chickens and keep them sustainably and humanely. And then we also will be starting online courses after the new year, with GoToMeeting, and we'll do a series, I think, of eight sessions, and then we're just going to keep rolling over these courses. And we are prepared, quite frankly, to go into a community and train a core group of people so that you've got a cohort there and literally get the learning curve straight up for that community about how to enable their local agriculture by employing chickens as well as growing heirloom vegetables and fruits.
Uh-huh.
So it's pretty exciting, I must say. And like I say, it's all done by the Gossamer Foundation. We backstop these courses locally, getting sponsors and even providing some scholarships and, of course, the ever developing training materials, because we're learning so much. And I'm a co-author of the book Chicken Tractor. It was written about over 20 years ago.
Oh, I remember that book.
Yeah. I mean, it's become a classic. And I think it helped start the chicken movement because it gave people such an easy, economical, low-tech way to get into smaller flocks. But we've learned so much where the chicken tractor now is putting the chickens where they can do the most work and provide the most good for your garden. Mm-hmm. So we're learning every day about how to use these chickens more and more.
Excellent. Well, you know, we're almost out of time, Pat. Do you want to tell people your website again?
Oh, thank you, Karen. Yes, it's www.chickensandyou.com. Chickensandyou.com. And it also has the complete Occupy Backyard statement there. It talks about the chicken have more plan, how you can have a lot of land and a little living with chickens. And then there's course descriptions with all the 20 courses. And we're looking for trainers as well. I mean, we want this to literally just go viral almost across the U.S. so that as a culture and as a nation, we're much stronger in local foods and in local proteins.
That's true.
Including
eggs. Excellent.
Yeah.
Excellent. Thank you so much for being with us, Pat. You've been listening to Country Joe's Chicken Show here on All Paws Pet Talk Radio, and we'll be right back with more.
Rearrange my family tree.
back to All Paws Pet Talk, Country Joe's Chicken Show. Here with Joe Barber, and with us, we have a very special guest. This is Craig Russell, and I will let you guys talk and say where Craig is from.
Okay, Craig is the president of Society for the Preservation of Poultry and Antiquities.
Yeah.
I got it. There we go. And it's a very, very fun club. I just joined this, and I hope we can get you a lot of members after this, because rare chickens just are a soft spot with me. As you know, I keep saying that all, on all these shows, and I keep buying more and more and more because I just can't get enough. And it's fun to learn. You know, I far from know everything about rare chickens, but boy, I'm sure learning off of you, Craig. I'll tell you, you tell me something new every time I talk to you.
Well, thank you very much. It's nice to be back, and certainly the SPPA has become the champion of rare chickens, and the chickens that we were set up to preserve, the old breeds, are in too many cases members of that group. But I think in the last few years, even though the society is 45 years old, I think in the last few years, we have seen a real increase in the keeping of chickens in general, and the old historic types in particular.
That's true. Boy, I didn't even realize about a lot of these rare chickens until I started really getting into this. And it's amazing. I never knew we had rare chickens.
Yeah, I think most people think a chicken is a chicken is a chicken, and yeah, don't know that there are different species, different breeds of chicken from different areas of the world, and that there are big differences in the chickens.
That's absolutely true. There are various groups of chickens. The chickens, domestic chickens, are descended from wild jungle fowl, and the principal ancestor was the red jungle fowl. But some, such as the Sumatra and so on, have some green jungle fowl blood. And we have found some types that have some gray jungle fowl blood. But once again, the red jungle fowl, which is colored like a black-breasted red Old English game, or very much like a brown leghorn, is the wild color of chickens, actually, although the greens, the grays, the Ceylonese have contributed some genes to some groups of chickens.
Mm-hmm. So it all started back with the jungle fowl, right? That's when we go
right,
back to
over the years, they have pushed back till now they're convinced that there were domestic chickens at least 8,000 years ago, perhaps longer. 50 years ago, they were saying, well, the chicken has been domesticated for maybe 3,000 years, but they keep pushing it back, and with archaeological finds and so on. Now, chickens are essentially old world, but they've been in the new world for a very long time. We now have archaeological proof that there were chickens here before Columbus. Obviously, they came from Europe and Asia, and the Spanish accounts would indicate that they probably had come from both places. So Columbus was not the first to get here.
Aha. Uh-huh.
That's right. So they think that when people crossed over the land bridge from Asia all those years ago, that they had domesticated chickens way back then?
Well, they may have had domestic chickens back then, but nobody thinks the tribesmen who came across the land bridge brought them. There were obviously some sea contacts before Columbus. We know that the Vikings and probably the Celts were here before Columbus, and there are early accounts of the Spanish finding Chinese junks trading on the west coast of Mexico, And, of course, they have found Japanese and Chinese artifacts in digs in on the west coast of South America. So it was early seafarers who brought the chickens. And the bulk of the chickens in the New World seem to have been of Asiatic origin, but the Spanish did record chickens very much like their own chickens in some areas. So Columbus gets the credit, but a lot of other people on early sailing ships were here with chickens before he made it.
Uh-huh.
In fact, Columbus is probably better known for taking things like turkeys and Muscovy ducks back to the Old World rather than bringing chickens here.
Yeah. Wow. That's interesting. That's really interesting. And we talked about, you know, rare chickens. And I was going to ask you, I've been curious to ask you this, about how many different breeds of truly rare chickens are there, or does anybody know?
Well, yeah, people – and then you get into the way we count them. There are certainly chickens that the average person thinks are rare, but in certain communities – certain areas are not rare, but there are hundreds of breeds and varieties. And here's a good example, Joe. Mm-hmm. As recently as the 1960s, now 50 years ago roughly, there were more than 200 breeds and varieties of poultry, and that's all poultry, but most of them were chickens, commonly used in agriculture in North America. Today, although backyarders and homesteaders and do-it-yourselfers keep a wide variety of poultry, today there are less than a dozen types in commercial agriculture.
Wow.
And one change, this is off the chicken thing, but in the at the beginning of the 20th century, roughly 15% of the poultry raised here were geese. Today, commercial geese account for less than one-half of 1% of the poultry produced in North America.
That's
amazing. So there have been a lot of changes, and essentially all the geese, except perhaps the Emden, are now rather rare. The same thing has happened with turkeys. The commercial turkey today is the broad-breasted white, and the old heritage turkeys, which I prefer because of taste and so on, although they're starting to come back as holiday birds, they make up less than 1% of the turkeys produced, and an even smaller amount of all poultry. And
right.
That has grown drastically in the last 10 years. So you can figure pretty much that if you get by Leghorns, Rhode Island Reds, the Cornish Rock Cross, which is a multiple hybrid, principally today Cornish and Rock, but rather than being an F1, it's like an F32, and it has a bit of other stock in it, some game, some Leghorns, so on and so forth. If you get by the Rhode Island Reds, the White Leghorns, and the meat hybrids, pretty much everything is a rare chicken. Okay, some White Rocks and Rhode Island Whites are kept to make red sex links, but commercial birds are mostly sex links, strain cross White Leghorns. There are some Rhode Island Reds, and the meat hybrids, and that's pretty much it. You're starting to see the rise of some other hybrids, a little slower growing, perhaps like they were in the 60s and the 70s, to give you a slightly older bird with more of a chicken flavor. But other than backyarders and people who want their own, the chickens are mostly rare.
Wow.
Even things like barred rocks, New Hampshire reds, Delawares, which were at one time the primary commercial chickens. Even those are rather rare. And I'm sorry, Karen.
That's okay. Craig, Joe, we are out of time for this segment, but I can tell we have lots more to talk about.
Oh, yeah.
Listeners, we will be right back with more of Country Joe's Chicken Show here on All Paws Pet Talk Radio.
I'm a bridge.
She said, rearrange my family tree. A chicken is what I want to be.
Welcome back to Country Joe's Chicken Show here on All Paws Pet Talk Radio. And we are very privileged to have as our guest Craig Russell from the Poultry Preservation of Antiquities. Gosh, I knew I was going to mess that up. Craig, could you
poultry
tell us what it is again?
The Society for the Preservation of Poultry Antiquities.
And tell us how to join that, Craig, because we got to get.
Well, let me grab the information here. We actually have a website, which I don't go to without a computer, that will give you the information. But you want to send your membership, and you can send an annual membership of $15 or 2 years for $25. Now, for people who are really serious about poultry conservation, a lifetime membership is still $200, but the Secretary Treasurer tells me that's probably going to go up simply because of cost of servicing the members. But the memberships go to Dr. Charles Everett, and that's E-V-E-R-E-T-T. He's at Tulip Grove, 1057 Nick Watts Road, and that's Nick, N-I-C-K, like Santa Claus. And Watts, W-A-T-T-S, Road, and I'm probably mispronouncing this being a northerner, Lugoff, L-U-G-O-F-F, South Carolina, 29078. And, for instance, you can send in multiples of those. $40 gets you 3 years, $50 would get you four, and so on. Whatever is most convenient. We put out a breeder's directory every 2 years. We're considering changes in that and maybe alternating it with a yearbook, but we also include four bulletins each year and a lot of good information. The one thing the SPPA has had is lots of people who are familiar with poultry, and a lot of good articles, a lot of historic articles, articles on how to, and just some reminiscing from the flock now and then. If you like chickens or ducks or geese or guinea fowl or turkeys, we'd love to have you as a member. And if you've got material you would like to share with us, we would love to have that too.
Mm-hmm. That's very interesting. Yeah, because I got my first bulletin after joining, and wow, it's just really interesting. You know, I've read it from cover to cover. I've read it like three times already. I'm waiting for another one. That's how interested I am.
I've been a member since they were founded in '67, and I still do that, Joe. I go over them time after time.
That's right. Now, Craig, what chickens do you have yourself? Do you have any?
Oh, yes. My principal breed is the Dorking, and in fact, I've been involved since the early days, actually, of the SPPA. I joined the SPPA and got Dorkings in 1967, and principally in the 70s, although a little in the 60s and some into the 80s, I was very busy gathering up old flocks of Dorkings. Now, the American Poultry Association recognizes five varieties of Dorkings, more if you consider the fact that they have both rows and single comb cuckoo Dorkings, which are marked pretty much like a Dominique and are probably where one of the places the Dominique got its markings from the cuckoo dorking and the old French cuckoo. But whites, coloreds, which are actually a dark golden gray, silver grays, reds, those are the other recognized varieties. But historically, there were many others. So I have what the old timers would have called slate or slate grays, some slate reds. In other breeds, that would be called blue-breasted red or blue-breasted gray. But the Dorking folks go way back, and they the red Dorking is red like a black-breasted red Old English game, and dates to a time Dorkings actually are probably pre-Roman in origin and were brought to Britain, even though we think of them as a British fowl, by the Romans under Julius Caesar. I also keep the Orientals. Some of those breeds are even more ancient than the Dorkings. I keep Old English games, probably the only Western breed to seriously rival and perhaps surpass the Dorking for age, although there are other old European breeds. The Spanish group go way back, as do the chickens that we call Polish now, although it's far from certain that they actually originated in Poland, although they've certainly been kept there. I do keep some of the Old English games. I keep Orientals. My wife loves the dark brown egg chickens like the Marans and the Welsomers, the Penedosinkas, and the Barnvelders. She likes the chickens with the blue and green eggs like the Americanas and the Araucanas. She, like Joe, has a weakness for Campines and Fayumis and Lakenvelders. We have quite a collection. One of my old mentors, Bruce Lentz, always said that he never hankered after a white chicken and that Bantams weren't real chickens, although he was very successful with Bantams. And except for my white Dorkings, I've pretty much settled down to that, although I've raised pretty much everything in the standard at one time or another. But I think I'm more successful concentrating on a few, and the old historic types are my main interest. One of the Orientals, the Malays, are paintings on the temples at Angkor Wat that would pass for a standard illustration for the modern Malay. So they go back probably much longer, but at least 4,000 years.
Wow, I've been trying to get one of those, and I'm having a hard time.
I
can't find anybody.
Well, I know people who raise them, like me, for instance, and we'll see that you get some, Joe.
Oh, good.
Although Dr. Everett, Dr. Charles Everett, also has them, and he's closer. But I can give you a whole list of names down that way.
God, I'd love a three-foot rooster.
Well, most of them are a little over 2 feet. There have been roosters that approach that, but most of the Malays are. But a 26 or a 27 inch rooster is an impressive sight.
Yeah. God, I gotta get.
And I must say, being in Florida, they're somewhat better for you than for me. I have to keep them in the lower barn during the winter because they are tight feathered tropical birds. And they feel the cold where many other birds can take it very easily.
So they wouldn't be good for me up here in Boston.
No, guess not.
No, not an ideal Boston chicken. Although I suspect, having had a cousin and some friends in Boston, that your weather is actually more moderate most of the time than mine here in central Pennsylvania. You get more influence from the seacoast than I do.
That's right. You know, Mr. Russell, I want to thank you so much. We are out of time this week. Folks, you've been listening to Country Joe's Chicken Show here on All Paws Pet Talk Radio. Our website is allpawspettalk.com, and you can listen to the show streaming online 24/7 at WPET.com. talkradio.com. And if you have any questions for Joe Barber, or even we can, you know, get questions to Mr. Russell, even though he's not a computer person, we have his phone number. You can fill out the form right there on allpawspettalk.com with questions for any of our hosts. And I want to thank everyone, and we'll be back next week. And Joe, will you join me in saying, may the flock be with you?
Yep, be with you. I love that, huh? May the flock be with you. That's good. I like that.